All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a CW-2 helicopter pilot in Vietnam in 1969. I want to welcome you to our program today. By the way, happy Father's Day to all of you out there. We're really excited to have you hopefully call into the program. And let me get your pencil out because I want you to give you this number, 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. What I want you to do is to pick up your phone and call that number and tell me and tell our audience what your dad did while he was in the service. That's the only assignment that I have for you today. I want to thank everybody that has sent us little stories and snippets and so forth to my email and to on our Facebook accounts. So I'm going to be using those, but I need some people to call us in so we can tell the whole stories. I'm pretty interested in finding out what your dad did in the service. And it's kind of interesting, you know, when we talk about Father's Day, you know, we all had one. And, you know, some of our relationships with our dads were not the best. Some of them were just terrific. Some of them were somewhere in between. But, you know, let me know. What did your dad do? You know, I was trying to do some research for this today. And I was looking at quotes that people had sent us and so forth. And I think it was kind of neat because I said, you know, one of them said that my dad was an incredible man. He provided for his family and made sure his children had the guidance they needed. I am grateful for my dad, and I miss him every day. And I have a feeling that many of us that are listening today, unfortunately, have lost our dads. And it's important that we think about them. The reason that I mention this is when we talk about veteran stories, one of the things that we try to concentrate on is making sure that we say their names. And because if we say their names, then they're not forgotten. And it's the same thing with your dad, your mom, anybody else in your family. But on this day especially, we want you to say your dad's name. My dad was William Clifton Thronberry. He went by Cliff. He was in the Coast Guard during World War II. He was drafted. Actually, he enlisted before he got drafted. He was 38 years old when he went into the service. He joined the Coast Guard because he figured he would be able to guard the coast. It ended up that he guarded the coast of Iwo Jima and Okinawa. But anyway, he, as I said, he went through basic training at 38 years old. And I can remember some of the stories. He didn't talk about it too much, just like most of our dads didn't tell us too much about their time in the service. But I thought it was interesting because he said, yeah, we would go out, they'd start running, and this other older guy and I, we would cut behind the side of the barracks and we'd just wait till they came back. Kind of interesting, right? So anyhow, so he ended up, as I mentioned before, taking an LSD 884 and taking it from New Orleans, where it was christened, I guess is the word. I'm not a Navy person, so I don't know about these things. And, oh, by the way, did you know that the Coast Guard came under the control of the Navy during World War II? That's how he ended up out in the Pacific. Anyway, he went through the Panama Canal, came up the coast of Mexico. Evidently, they stopped in Tijuana because there's a picture of him sitting at a table with three or four other enlisted guys. And off they went, off into the Pacific in this 300-foot-long LST, which is a landing ship tank. For those of you guys in the Navy, you can correct me. But somebody else that I talked to about LST said they were long, slow targets. They were flat-bottom boats. So ships, excuse me, Navy guys. Can you imagine going across the Pacific Ocean with a flat-bottom ship? Just kind of every time you'd hit a wave, it would bounce everything loose all over you. Anyway, they ended up on Iwo Jima on the second day. And we have pictures of his LST on the beaches of Iwo Jima. And the LST is a ship that the whole front end opens up, kind of like a clam, opens up and tanks and things would roll out. So they were responsible for resupplying that. From there, when that battle was over, they went up to Okinawa, where they were going to be involved in, I think it was said to be the largest invasion of the Pacific. At that time, more Navy ships were everywhere all around the island of Okinawa, because that was the closest island to the mainland of Japan. Anyhow, on April 8th of 1945, their ship was hit by a kamikaze pilot, and evidently the airplane, the Zero, went into the ship and into the ammo area where the ammunition was stored. So they had secondary explosions and so forth, and they were told to abandon ship. So my dad went swimming in the Pacific Ocean, and then they volunteered. It looked like things were going to be wasn't going to blow up. That my dad, along with a number of other people, volunteered to go back on the ship and to see if they can, get engines started or anything like that. But unfortunately, it was dead in the water. And the Navy has an official picture. I think if you look on our website, veteransradio.net, you can see his ship out in the middle of the Pacific on fire. So anyway, so they put the fire out. They towed it back around to the, I guess it would be the west side of the island. And basically his time in World War II was over, because the ship was useless, and they towed it back to Hawaii. And by the time he got back to Hawaii and so forth, they had dropped the atomic bombs and the war was over. And he got out in 1945, and here I am. As I tell people, direct result of World War II. So that's what I'm looking for. I want you to tell us some stories about your dad. The number is 734-822-1600. Before we get into that, if any of you, will please give us a call. I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors, and they include the Legal Help for Veterans, who specializes in veteran disability claims. Make sure that you give them a call at 800-693-4800. That's legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, you can go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. Veterans Lending Council is where you can learn all there is to know about VA loans, whether you're looking to get a loan or whether you're looking to, you work in a bank and you want to be able to offer VA loans. You can find the Veterans Lending Council on Facebook. Let's go there. Make sure that you also want to thank the American Legion Post 46 out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, the VFW 423 out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 310, the Charles S. Kettles chapter here again in Ann Arbor. We thank all of them for doing that. And also, we want to make sure that we thank you for your continued support of Veterans Radio. It's really our honor to bring these stories to you. And thanks to your donations and your support, we can keep doing this. I want to remind the people that are listening that will get this at a later version. Don't call that number that I gave, because when you listen to the program, it's on a Monday or on a Saturday in Minnesota. So, don't do that. But those of you that are nearby, come on, give me a call, 734-822-1600. All right. You're not going to call me. I'm going to tell a story then. So there. All right. I asked at a meeting the other day, I said, how many of you have, veterans or father, as your father was a veteran? And I was very surprised, because this was a local Vietnam veterans meeting, and not that many did have dads that were in the service. But I do have one story I wanted to tell you, and this is from Stan Harrison, who happens to be the president of our local chapter. And he was a staff sergeant in the Air Force, 1967 to 71. He says, my father, Robert Harrison, was born in London, England in the year 1900. Wow, I thought my dad was old. He was 1904. Anyway, Stan's dad was orphaned at about 12 years old and sent to Canada so that he could work on a farm to earn his keep. He was unhappy there, so when World War I broke out, he ran away. He lied about his age and joined the Canadian Army. He seldom spoke of his time in military service. I do know, mostly from other family members, that he was at Gallipoli. He said he was wounded by shrapnel, which took off part of two fingers. Wow. And he contracted sleeping sickness, which recurred later in life. He was 48 years old when I was born, the last of his five children, in 1948. He died in 1967 while I was a 19-year-old in basic training. Years later, I was able to access some Canadian military records from World War I. They were very sketchy. His birthday seems to have moved around and incomplete, but they were interesting nonetheless. There was no record of Gallipoli or being wounded or sleeping sickness. There was a record of his being shipped to Salonika. There were hospital notes that said his fingers were healing well, but that he was suffering from blackouts and nighttime hysteria, which were thought to be caused by extensive exposure to shelling. Today, we would call that post-traumatic stress. The archive also showed that he enlisted three times. Twice he was discharged for being underage and undersized, but he kept coming back. Stan says, my father was unfailingly good-natured. Even my high school friends enjoyed his company. I miss him. I don't care that we might have gotten a story wrong or that he may have used sleeping sickness as a euphemism for post-traumatic stress. I wish he were here today, even though he would be 122 years old. I can relate to that, Stan. My dad would be 118. No, can't be 118. What's 1904 to 2022? Yeah, holy mackerel. Okay, we do. We have a call on the line right now. We've got Don from Rodeo, California. Don, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, thank you. I was just listening to Mr. Dr. Janda. And my dad was Michelangelo Grappo, and he was on the Jean Lafitte, the supply ship out in the Pacific. And, he ended up getting sick, and he ended up back in Seattle. And then he finally landed back down in San Francisco, and I've lived in the San Francisco Bay Area my whole life. And my dad was a good dad. He was a control freak, but I look at control freaks in a way that it's, if they have their stripes on their shoulder, it's okay. I just don't like control freaks who really don't have the ability to do that. You know what I mean?
Some of us that, you know, anytime we are in a service, we end up having problems with authority figures. Let's put it that way. Uh-huh. which I think is kind of interesting when you think about it, that the whole time we were in the service, we're taking orders from people because they outrank us. And civilian life, it doesn't necessarily work. So you said that your dad got sick.
Yeah, he got some kind of sickness, and they almost killed him because they gave him the antibiotic, and it just about killed him. And then as soon as he got off that, he seemed to get better. He was allergic to the popular antibiotic, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, like amoxicillin or something like that?
Yeah, whatever it was. Anyway, so he finally came back, and he had a choice to either join IBM or work for the IRS. He worked for the IRS for a long time, but he said working for the government was bad because there's so many idiots in the government. And,
let's not get onto that because I think we may have a few people agreeing with that. Thanks, Don. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's nice to call. Thank you.
Bye now. All right. I've got Minnie on the phone, and Minnie is I was talking to her the other night at the BVA meeting that I went to, and she mentioned that her dad was from the Philippines. So here we go. Minnie Draper. Welcome, Minnie.
Thank you, Mr. Stoneberry. What did you want me to tell the whole world about my father?
I wanted you to tell the whole world about your dad being from the Philippines, and he joined the Navy as part of the Expeditionary Force?
Yes. He He was a Filipino guerrilla fighter and was hooked up with the Americans until General MacArthur liberated the Philippines, and then he was asked to join any of the armed services, and he joined the U.S. Navy and made a career out of it. And he brought my mother and I here in 1958, and he was stationed at the Norfolk Naval Base and did a lot of deployments to the Mediterranean, Scandinavian, and the Caribbean. And when he was in a guerrilla fighter, he had was wounded with a shrapnel in his leg, and he refused to have it removed because he always told me that he wanted to remember that our country was saved by the Americans and from bad people. And I've always remembered that. And he always told me, being after the Flag Day ceremony, that to always honor the flag, because many Americans died saving my birth country. Sorry if I'm getting emotional.
That's fine. That's fine. You know, how many times do we hear this when we're talking about the sacrifices that, you know, so many people made, especially during, you know, anytime you're in, you know, in a combat situation, but especially during World War II, you know, that we...
Right. And as an addition, he never believed in any other country except the U.S. because he was grateful to be able to live in the United States. He could have stayed in the Philippines because he came from a well-to-do family that escaped the fall of Manila into the jungles, and that's how he got involved as a guerrilla fighter. Mm-hmm. And so he took the first opportunity to come to the United States. And I was made in the Philippines, as I tell my friends, but I was educated down in Virginia. And until he retired in 69, he retired in El Centro Naval Air Facility and settled in Oxnard. And that's where I met my husband through my father. And he brought me back here to Michigan. But I've always remembered my father saying that if I, as an 8-year-old, to always honor that flag. And if I was to go to a store and there was a tattered flag, that to tell that store owner to change the flag and make sure that if he didn't, that I was to tell all my friends and family not to go to that store until that store owner changed the flag.
That's a great story. You also have a little story that you can tell about your, you just became an American citizen, didn't you?
Oh, boy. Yes, I did. My father at that time, when I turned 14, said I could have easily been naturalized, but he wanted to make my own mind and to see what the United States is all about. So it took me a long time, and my husband went online to put the paperwork through, and I was asked to go to the INS in Detroit to take the test, the immigration test. Once you apply, you are given 100 questions booklet to learn about the civics and U.S. history, which I've already known because that was my favorite subject going, you know, getting educated through high school and college. And when I was asked to, you were supposed to answered 20 questions out of that 100 questions, and if you answered 6, you passed a test. Well, and then I was asked the 4 questions, and then the officer was telling me about her family. I was telling her about my family, and the 3 requirements to become a citizen is to read, write, and speak English, and she waived that after speaking to me. So I passed the test.
You did, and then congratulations, and I think you speak English very well.
Right, and then on June 1st, I got sworn in, was it.
That's great, and thank you very much for calling, and I greatly appreciate you doing that, because I know it was a little bit of it, you were nervous.
Yes, I was.
But you did
so much.
You did great. Thanks, Minnie. I greatly appreciate you calling in. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. So, hey, we got another story here. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Veterans Radio and our website and all the other information that goes on out there. But I have a young lady who does all that work for me, and we couldn't communicate with the outside world without her help. And that is Tammy Bethune. And Tammy is on the line, and she's got a pretty good story about her relatives. So, Tammy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. And it's a pleasure to be a speaking voice on Veterans Radio.
So tell me, I've got your picture here right in front of me.
Mm-hmm. I shared it on social media, and I will post that on the website. And it's a picture of six relatives, my father, his brother, and four of his brother-in-laws. And they're all in uniform. And this picture was taken, as I understand, after the war ended, and there was a small community parade in Canton, Pennsylvania, where they all lived. So when this photo goes up, you'll see that it's Dean Mahood, Hiram Wood, my dad's brother, Pete Keltz, Marshall Huffa, Colonel Wood, and Colonel is not
Colonel was his
a
name.
Title. It is his actual name, common back in the day. And that's my dad. And then Lee Raynard.
Okay. I'm looking at the picture right now for our audience. I'll try to paint the picture. We've got four people in the Navy and two Army guys.
Correct. Yep.
Right, and they have the old Navy uniforms on. They don't have the white hats on. They have like blue. Some of the Navy people could understand that a little bit better than I am. So tell me about Colonel Wood.
To be honest, I know little, but here's what I know. His brother went in the Navy, and he felt he should be a Navy man as well, and he lied about his age so that he could enlist. And he claims that he stayed on board while the older servicemen went ashore, and he stayed on board so that he could polish shoes and iron their uniforms and make some money. And he did that because his mother taught him better.
Yeah.
Don't go ashore.
That one with the proverbial grain of salt, right?
And he was young. He was very young to be, among.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you had to lie to get in,
the other servicemen. Yeah.
Made him, what, 16 or 17 years old?
I'm guessing that's about correct. Yeah.
Okay.
I need to get some more details on that. And hopefully some of my cousins will have some of that. I just contacted Lee Raynard's daughter, and she's got a ton of information, but didn't feel comfortable being on the radio. So I can take that information when she provides it to me, and I can share that on the website as well.
Okay, well, that's one of the things that we want to inspire people to do with today's program is to find out what your dad did in the service, or your mom, especially during World War II, or in today's world, you never know. I think the idea of finding out the story of your dad's service is really interesting, especially to future generations, because if we don't write the stories down or record the stories, no one's ever going to know. What Colonel did, Colonel Wood, what did he do?
Right. And Dale, I sent you in advance my uncle's story.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want me to read that? It's a self-written service story.
Is this the one where he was turned 18?
Yes.
Hiram Wood.
Right.
Yeah. Tell him, let's talk about that a little bit, because I don't think many of us can understand just even the transportation of getting to where you had to go during World War II.
Yeah, and some odd things happened to Uncle. I called him Uncle Junior. His name's Hiram. So he turned 18, and again, I'm going to read as he wrote it. When I turned 18 in 1944, I was drafted into the service. I rode to Towanda, Pennsylvania, with Bob Evans, where a Greyhound bus waited to take all of the Bradford County, Pennsylvania draftees to Scranton, Pennsylvania for physicals. And after a few days, I got a letter saying I had passed. And I had asked for the Navy, and I got my request. I was sworn in at Scranton location on April 8, 1944. I was sent to boot training at Bainbridge, Maryland. And during boot training, I got knocked to the floor in the gym and damaged my cartilage in the right knee. I was in the hospital for 5.5 months. Only once were my parents able to get down to see me during all that time, and due to gas rationing, they had to ride the train. I lacked 5 days of completing boot training to graduate with my class. They made me take the whole 7 week of boot training over. Then I was shipped to Solomon Islands, Maryland, where I drove a crane truck to load torpedoes and depth bombs, which they took out into the bay, Chesapeake Bay, where they tested experimentally these various weapons. And I was shipped from there to Stump Neck, Maryland, which was an ordnance depot. Captured enemy weapons and equipment were brought here to be inspected and experimented with. I saw my first Japanese one-man torpedo, all sorts of German and Japanese guns, explosives, and equipment. I was a gopher there for whatever was needed. I was sent from there to Bethesda Hospital for my poor hearing. I was honorably discharged November 3, 1945, after serving 22 months and 11 days. So there's more to this story, but I don't know how much time you have, Dale, and if there's other stories to share.
I just think these stories are just amazing. You know, I mean, he's talking about... You know, we can share this on the website, but I said you would get home by, you know, either, you know, taking the train or hitchhiking and or getting lost or leaving. He left some stuff on a train and we went back to get it. It was still there.
Right. And then the train left without him and he started to walk, hoping to get a ride. But I don't know that he ever get, doesn't say that he got a ride. It was cold and dark and no traffic because of the gasoline rationing. Mm-hmm. But he finally saw a light at a farmhouse and he went to the door and he says, I knocked on the door and asked if I could use the phone to call home. The woman wanted to know how far I had walked. And when I told her, she insisted that I lay down on her couch until morning when she would take me to the nearest city where she knew some trucks would be passing through. After I had called my parents to let them know I would come home as soon as I could, I stayed the rest of the night in her home, getting warm and sleeping. And in the morning, she took me and got me to a place where I could get a truck ride. So I went to the railroad station, and they had my duffel bag and the pea coat that I had left on the train. So he says I hitched the rest of the way home. I never got off a train again after that until I reached my destination.
That's understandable.
And the final sentence of this little small thing that happened, kind of a big thing, on his way after being released from service, he remembered that woman, and he said, on my honeymoon in 1948, I stopped at this lady's house and again thanked her for being so kind to me. That's for sure my Uncle Junior.
That's a great story, Tammy. Thank you very much. I think it's so cool that, you know, that he went back and actually was able to find the house. And, you know, the whole thing is that it sounds like, you know, one of those, I don't know, urban legends, you know, some guy went up to a farmer's house and knocked on the door and somebody actually opened the door. I don't think you're going to have that happen too much today, which is too bad.
I have one more short story because I found the obituary for my uncle, Mike Huffa. I call him Uncle Mike. His name's Marshall. And I'd like to read that. It's just two sentences. But
okay.
He was great at telling stories, and I'm hoping that my cousin Joanne will be able to pull some more details for me so that we can record that and share it for all of these six men who participated. And additionally, I do have an aunt who was a nurse in the war, so I'm doing her research as well. So my uncle, Mike Huffa, he served a distinguished military career during World War II as a tech sergeant with U.S. Army's 99th Troop Carrier Squadron, where he participated in seven major European theater campaigns, spanning from D-Day through the end of the war. And in addition to being honored with a Purple Heart Medal, he received France's high honor. The La Croix de Guerre and his unit received special commendation. And that's all I know about, in fact, you know, for Uncle Mike. But I hope to have more details in time.
Yeah, I hope so,
too. Thanks for letting me share our stories.
You are more than welcome. See, this is what we're doing, folks. Thanks, Tammy, very much.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Thanks to Mike, too. I hope he had a good one, too. All right. Bye-bye. All right. So that's what we're doing today. We're telling stories of our dads, our uncles. I've got some more that I'll fill you in with. But first, we're going to take a quick break here. And this is going to be our Medal of Honor. And the interesting thing about the Medal of Honor segment on today's program is there is only one father and son that ever, each of them, received the Medal of Honor. I'll let you guess who they are. So we're going to take a break. The number again, 734-822-1600. Give us a call. Tell us about your dad.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. A father and his son were both awarded the Medal of Honor. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
First Lieutenant Arthur MacArthur was awarded the Medal of Honor for seizing the colors of his regiment at a critical moment and planting them on the captured works on the crest of Missionary Ridge, Tennessee, November 25th, 1863. His son, General Douglas MacArthur, was awarded the Medal of Honor for conspicuous leadership in preparing the Philippine Islands to resist conquest, for gallantry above and beyond the call of duty in action against invading Japanese forces, and for the heroic conduct of defensive and offensive operations on the Bataan Peninsula. His utter disregard of personal danger under heavy fire and aerial bombardment, his calm judgment in each crisis, inspired his troops, galvanized the spirit of resistance of the Filipino people, and confirmed the faith of the American people in their armed forces.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
My old man's a sailor. What do you think about that? He wears a sailor's collar. He wears a sailor's hat. He wears a sailor's raincoat. He wears a sailor's shoes. And every Saturday evening, he reads the Sunday news. And someday, if I can, I'm gonna be a sailor, the same as my old man.
All right. That song has been in my head all week, and I don't know why it was, but that was Tom and Dick Smothers from their TV program back in the late 60s and so forth. And there are many, many verses that goes along with it, but that one just kind of stuck in my head. And so we're here, we're talking about Father's Day, and then we want to know what your dads did while they were in the service. And I got a couple of messages here that I want to read to you that we received during the week. So speaking of Navy, okay, I've got, this is from Herman Fulford III, and this came off of our Facebook account. And it says, Dad was a pharmacist mate. Early on, he was in on a dock and then to Frisco. He was assigned to LSD number 731. He was in, oh boy, Inuwatuk, Guam, and finally Iwo Jima on Orange Beach. As war is, and in some medical knowledge, he ended up on shore, taking the place of a corpsman with the 5th Marines. Post Iwo, LSD 731 was moved offshore and was designated a hospital ship. I imagine in reparation for Okinawa. He returned and was discharged in November 1945. I remember well the war's after effects on him for years. I once asked him regarding Iwo Jima, and he said only four words. It was a mess. Never said another word, and I never asked him again. I can relate to that one for sure. Thanks, Herman, for sending that in. We have Scott Murray that sent us a note, and Scott says that he had six uncles in World War II and an older brother that served in Korea. Wow. Jeffrey Keith, all I know about my dad's service in the Army was that he was during the Korean conflict, he was in Germany. Lucky guy. I put in for Germany. A lot of guys I know put in for Germany. We didn't get to go. It's too bad. Lee Parker, his dad is Lucille Delbert Parker. Lee is an Air Force, was in the Air Force along with his brother, Mike Parker, and his other brother, Gary Parker, was in the Army, and evidently his dad served in Vietnam. And I appreciate so much that, you know, people reached out and let us, you know, tell these stories. From the meeting that I went to the other day, I got a couple of interesting ones. And one is Larry St. Antoine. He said his dad wasn't able to serve during World War II, mainly because he only had one eye. And I said, well, that makes sense. The other thing was that there were so many people that had deferments from being in what's it really called? Necessary occupations. That was it. So I had, we have a couple of people that I was talking to who was one's father was a coal mine worker, and he was exempt from military service because it was an essential industry. And so he spent his war in West Virginia in the coal mines. Let's see, John Colon, local people might be aware of him up in Hell, Michigan. His dad had the experience of being all set to be drafted. He went down to Detroit and was in line waiting, and the war ended. And so he was sent home. I think that's kind of a cool story. I like that one. That happened to me the first time I got my draft notice. I was living in Florida at the time, and I had to go down to Miami to get my physical. And I was in this long, huge, long line of guys, and a big giant sergeant came up and about four or five people in front of me and said, okay, that's it for the day. The rest of you, we'll call you back. Needless to say, I left the state. What did it take? It took him two more years to find me again. But that's the way that it was. So anyway, I wanted to let you know that, you know, being a dad is important. And for those of you, I'm encouraging you to reach out to your dads if you haven't had contact with them in a while, but obviously if they're still alive. And I know that sometimes relationships can get pretty strained. So take this opportunity to reach out. For you dads out there that haven't reached out to your sons, daughters in a long time, take this opportunity to reach out to them. You know, you only go around this world once, and it's a shame to go around it without your family. So whatever the issue was or is, see if you can come to some sort of agreement to settle that, and, you know, trying to reestablish that relationship with your kids. I think that is important. I was thinking of some other quotes that I found, and I thought that they were great. He says, today I'm remembering my dad and the great memories we shared. He was one of a kind and my best friend. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of him and smile. My father was my biggest fan and my biggest role model. I could call him at any time, and he was always had a solution for my problem. Life is different without him, but I'm grateful I got to call him my dad. When I remember my dad, I smile each time. He was a jokester, and he made us all laugh. He taught me not to take life too seriously. He was always in good spirits, even until the day he died. My dad was my hero. He was the most courageous and resourceful man. I never questioned if he loved or cared about me because he made it so obvious. I still feel him with me each day, and I am living life for the both of us now. Reach out to Dad. Find your dad. See what you can do. Dads are the most ordinary men turned by love into heroes, adventurers, storytellers, and singers of song. That comes from Pam Brown, who's an author. I like that one. A father is neither an anchor to hold us back nor a sail to take us there, but a guiding light whose love shows us the way. Harper Lee says in one of her stories, she said, she did not stand alone, but what stood behind her, the most potent moral force in her life, was the love of her father. This next one is unknown. It says, Dad, my mind still talks to you. My heart still looks for you. My soul knows you are at peace. The quality of a father can be seen in the goals, dreams, and aspirations he sets, not only for himself, but for his family. That's from Reed Markham. Father is the noblest title a man can be given. It is more than a biological role. It signifies a patriarch, a leader, an exemplar, a confidant, a teacher, a hero, a friend. That one came from Robert Blackman. He was a father. That's what a father does. He eases the burdens of those he loves, saves the ones he loves from painful last images that might endure for a lifetime. That's from George Saunders. What they're talking about, or what I'm trying to talk about here, is to remember to just reach out to your dad. If he's already passed on, think about him today. What was the best thing or the best day that you ever had with your dad? I was trying to think about that earlier today. And it came up to a picture that I saw recently going through an album. And it looks like I'm about 10 years old. So that would make my dad in his early 50s. And it was at a company picnic. And he was playing softball on one of the teams. And I was keeping score. And somebody took this picture of me sitting next to him. And we were watching somebody who had just hit a great, you know, had a great hit. And it just showed the relationship that we had. And I'm so grateful that I was able to have that picture and to think about him today, because unfortunately he left my life when he was 57. So I was 15 at the time. And, you know, we didn't talk about his time in the service. All the information that I found about him has come from other people. And from those of you who have been following Veterans Radio over the years, you'll remember we did a program, oh, I don't know, 10, almost 15 years now, where we had a man call into the program. And he said, very old at the time, and he said, I knew your dad. And I'm going, what? You knew my dad? And he goes, yeah, I knew your dad. I was on, you know, the LST and all this other stuff. And he told me stories I had never heard about. He also told me stories about what had happened on that April 8th, 1945 day when the ship was hit by a kamikaze, and how they had lost over 200 Marines that were in the hold of the ship, which explained a lot to me, understanding why my dad didn't want to talk about those things. So, you know, that's all we can do. We can, you know, we can ask our dad, you know, some questions about their time in the service. Sometimes they'll tell us, sometimes they won't. If they won't, well, we're kind of stuck. But we can do some research now, you know. This new technology out there, this internet, is kind of interesting in that you can get copies of all of your father's military records, his awards, and so forth, even if things were lost during that fire in St. Louis a number of years ago. But whatever the branch of the service is, normally you can find information about your dad, especially if you have his service number. you know, what branch he was in, when approximately when he served. It's astounding what you can find out. You know, when I said that, you know, his ship went down to, you know, started off in New Orleans, that's because somebody had taken the time to put together a little website for his ship, the LST-884. And on there are pictures that I had never seen of him. Pictures of his ship, pictures of his shipmates. And in doing some research afterwards, I found that he had actually attended a couple of reunions. Who knew? But he never talked about those, which was too bad. So if you get the opportunity to talk to your dad, if he's still around today, thank him very much for being a great dad, of course. And maybe he'll say something nice to you, especially if you've provided him with grandchildren. Because that's what grandparents love the best. Because we don't have it, you know, we don't have a whole lot of responsibility when it comes to our grandchildren in most cases. We just get to spoil them and send them home. Right? So that's what I want you to do. I was hoping some more people would contact us today. But not. So I'm going to find some more information here. Hold it. I got another one. Ah, here we go. Just came in. Wait. I have to look at the phone here. Somebody sent me a text. I got that one. Okay. So this one is from, Kathy Driscoll. And Kathy is, married to, a guy, Tim Driscoll, who was a former president of our local Vietnam Veterans of America. And Kathy sent this to me. She says, my dad, Edward M. Kalia, K-I-L-L-I-L-E-A, was in the United States Army Air Corps during World War II, and he served in North Africa. You know, think about the places that your dad might have been, especially if you're my age, and you think about your dad being 18, 19 years old during World War II and going just around the world and, you know, to places that they never imagined that they would ever go to. And, you know, of course, seeing things that they never imagined that they would ever see either. The week before last, we were talking to a World War II veteran on the program, and he was talking about, he was involved at, landed in France a couple of days after D-Day, and just the experiences that he had going through, going through France and Belgium and so forth, and being, you know, not necessarily in the Battle of the Bulge, but close enough where you knew what was going on, or the people that were in the Pacific. There are many people, obviously, whose parents were in the Pacific, not only on ships, but as Marines. And they were in, there's a group that I belong to, the Military Writers Society. And there were, I guess there were four or five of us whose dads had been on, involved with Iwo Jima. And we just talked about the whole thing of what did they tell us about it. Most of them never told us anything. So that's what we're trying to do here on Veterans Radio. We're trying to reserve these stories. And, the more we can, record them, we can get them into the Library of Congress, and we can also, it looks like somebody's on the phone. I think Derek is indicating that somebody's on the phone, but we only got a couple of minutes left. We'll see what happens here. All right. He's flashing fingers at me. Do we have somebody on the line? Oh, Mike. All right. Put Mike on the phone. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, good evening. Thank you for this opportunity. So happy Father's Day to all the fathers. So my father, Victor E. Hammett, was at Hickam Field, Pearl Harbor, when the Japanese attack. And he was in the Army Air Corps. He was a mechanic. He knew a lot of people that, you know, didn't come back from that day. And And then my father went on to become a Detroit firefighter, a hero. So that's, you know, my dad. My father-in-law was an infantry sergeant, Robert J. Walsh, Belgium, Germany. I mean, he was in it. He was a hero as well.
They're all heroes. I think, you know, they're all heroes. They, you know, they made the world safe for democracy. And
oh, my gosh.
And you have to admire them all.
Yes. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and as you are, thank you for your service, sir.
Same to you, Mike.
Yes. But you know what? I'm glad to be an American, and I hope that people support the vets more all the time, which I think that's the trend, and let's hope so.
Well, we're getting there, Mike. Thank you very much. We're coming up on the end of the hour. Thank you very much for your call.
My pleasure.
Thank you. All right, folks. We're coming up to the end of the program. I want to play a quick little section after I leave of Michael J. Martin's When Your Daddy Comes Home. And I think that that's important. Next week is our benefits program. So make sure that you, if you have any questions about your benefits or your health care, anything like that, tune in to Veterans Radio next week. If you want to do it live, we're on Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So until next week, this is Dale Thronberry. I've got the music back there, don't I, Derek? No, I don't? One more minute? Okay, stretch it out. All right, Dale, you can do this, right? All right. So anyway, so we're doing a benefits program next week. Get in there. Then we're coming up on the 4th of July, which, is, of course, is a big celebration. And I think it's what's important I want to make everybody aware of is when we talk about democracy, when we talk about freedom, this is the place that we've got it. And it's precious, and we have to do everything we can to keep it. So let's start figuring out a way where we can get along a little bit better with everybody else that's there and do some little compromising and see if we can help out each other along the way. All right? How am I doing now? Keep going. You know, this is great. This is what live radio is all about. So, all right, let me thank all of our sponsors again. We can do that. Legal Help for Veterans, NVBDC, everybody along the line. 4 seconds, 3 seconds. You're dismissed, folks. Come back next week.
When your daddy comes home, honey, we're gonna throw our arms around him. Our whole family will surround him and hold him tight. Then we'll bring him on